wickedness and sense of unchastity. So, unfortunately,
so, that's so, right. One thing I heard was that, you know, a person doing makeup and coming out in public, in the West even, it was not something that was common before the 60s.
Yes.
And if somebody did that before the 60s, there were a special, you know, type of people who were, you know, involved in this kind of, you know,
the
work.
The industry.
And but after the 60s, it became common, right? So much so that for us now in the West, it's like, you know, something that's very common. But even if I was to look at now, compared to when I was in high school, it's not that long ago, not that old. You see that it's becoming much worse and different as well, the type of clothing. So now, you know, that dignity and respect that a human being is supposed to have was basically reduced. Human beings are looked at in a different way. So now you see something that, you know, for example, the case of, you know, objectifying women that has happened now a lot more than before, right? Why do we need a model, you know, to sell a car, right? Like this, something that we see all the time in the West. You see newspapers, there's a car being sold, and there's a model in front of the car. Like, what does that have to do with the car? You know, it doesn't make the car go faster or make it better. Basically, it's objectifying women, using them for our own, you know, their own purposes to sell things.
One of the recent cases was Zara. Z-A-R-A, mocking the people who have been killed in Palestine. You know, there was one footage of a mother in Palestine who hugged her shrouded child in kafan. So now they did the same to the Zara fashion model with the shrouded one. So see how much cruel this world is and this industry. And this effa, I mean, the topic of effa and chastity is a good thing, you know. That's right. Every day, the people objectifying the women, and just look at these documentaries about those men and women who regretted their past life in such industries, fashion industries, porn industries, or something like that. You know, really, really, we can say they regret their past. That how much effort they missed.
So one really big crisis, I would say, for the modern world is this. That things that are supposed to be holy, things that are supposed to be sacred, they are basically made
desecrated.
Very desecrated. Low, right? So obviously you see the cases of, you know, the Quran being burned and the holy books being, all these things are there.
Yes.
But with the human beings, the same is true as well. The human being, the insan, is supposed to be Khalifatullah fil Ard, supposed to be the, you know, the representative of Allah on earth, somebody who is, you know, holy, somebody supposed to be, you know, really, really high up, a special creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And they're being used to sell cars, right? Like, what is how low have they made the human being?
IRIB English Radio presents questions and answers on Islamic beliefs. Answering your theological questions. In questions and answers on Islamic beliefs. Send us your questions to EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
So, Sayyid, what about this hijab and iffa in the other world? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has ordered his good people to act chastely in this world. So, you die, you go to barzakh. Over there is a life, there is a badan called badan al-misali. We do not want to get, for example, to that topic yet. It's a difficult one, explained by Mullah Sadra. But after that, when it is a day of judgment, and you get to the other world, whether being in hell or heaven, especially in the heaven, do we have any references in the Quran or Ahadith showing that the people are covered in the body or no?
All right, so we do have references that people will have clothes of silk, for example. They would have ornaments that are beautiful. Yes. So beautiful clothes, beautiful. Yes. And perhaps the reason for this is that second reason that we mentioned for hijab itself, which is the dignity of the human being, the, you know, the respect, the dignity, right? So, so it does appear that there will be clothing in the next world as well.
At least there is a chaste covering, isn't it?
There's covering of some of some type. Now, the exact nature of the next world, the hereafter, it's difficult for us to understand you know, what it will be like exactly. What, you know, we have been given glimpses of it in the Quran, in the Hadith, different descriptions of it. But to understand its exact nature, it's a bit difficult for us. So to say exactly how much the covering would be, you know, what exactly would include, that's difficult to say.
That's right.
But one thing to keep in mind is this, that there won't be, so there would be like respectable clothing.
Yes.
But the next world doesn't have, you know, ahkam shar'i as we know them, right? So laws that are there present in this world, they won't be present in the next world. There won't be, you know, haram and halal in that sense as it's over here.
Okay,
The reason for that is that this world is a place of test.
Mm-hmm.
The human being is such that in this world, they have, you know, two types of pull towards them. One is the earthly pull, pulling them down, making them attracted to the world. There's another pull that is pulling us up as well.
Yes.
But from my understanding, in the next world, there won't be that evil kind of nature of the human being that's there. And the people in heaven, they would have just the good nature.
Because the look is different and look is divine. You cannot have, for example, unchaste look in the other world when you are passing life in heaven, and still the quality of this body is not known to so many people. You know, there are some interpretations that, for example, you will be resurrected with your own body, or whether it is a body of light, or whether it is a body of your action, or something like that. So it is very much different. Or how many levels, for example, or degrees does the Jannah have? You know, these are different. But what I think is that this iffah, this topic of chastity, is for sure observed in the other world.
Right.
Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has ordered you in this world to observe it, for sure it is taken for granted in the other world.
Right, because it gives dignity and respect to the human
respect
being.
Respect to the human beings, that's all right. Hijab is not only for women. The men, you know, have their own hijab too. Unfortunately, nowadays, for example, when you take a look at this modern world, you can find also that the clothing of the men have changed too. I mean, nudist nakedness type of fashion models that are every day being, you know, renovated every day. The new models, new fashions, new outfits coming to the markets, you know, have changed the mindset of the people. Even the believing Muslims around the world are being affected by such industries, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But as you said, this is also a general topic related to the mind and soul of a human per se. A human being in general per se cannot be unchaste, cannot be naked, you know, isn't it?
Right.
And this hijab and covering is something related to the fitrah of the human being, the innate nature of the human being.
Yes. So one way to tell that, you know, it's part of our innate nature as human beings is what we already mentioned, that if you look at, you know, all the cultures across the globe before modernity, we see that in general they were, you know, well-clothed, you know, because it's the dignified way to be a human being is to have that kind of clothing. And that applies both to men and to women as well.
Yes.
The men also have to, you know, make sure that they wear decent clothing, and, you know, proper covering as well.
Yes.
Their ahkam are different. The amount of clothing that's wajib, that's different. And even within women as well, or within the type of coverings as well, you could have like covering that is there, but it's, you know, might be a bit...
It's not complete.
It's not complete or it's tight, right?
Yes.
But then there are types of covering that, such as the chador that is observed here.
Abaya.
Abaya, chador.
Yes, yes.
These things are a better form of covering.
Yes, yes.
They're more respectable as well. Or within men as well, right?
Yes.
You can have different types of covering too.
Yes.
So, yes.
That's all right. Okay. Thank you, Master Sayyid Zain, for a nice elaboration. As we said, we do not have a clear picture of what would happen to the covering and hijab in the other world. But for sure, it is chaste. It is something related to the true sense of the honor of the human being. Ashraf al-Makhlouqat, as you said, Khalifatullah, the vicegerent of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on earth. You know, when this title is given to the human being, so the clothing must adjust. Must fit it. That's right. Okay, thank you much. It's very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanillah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
To honor and celebrate the significance.
In the Nigerian capital, Abuja, Muslim women and girls have held a conference on hijab, claiming that women are still persecuted and discriminated against for having hijab in the country. This is despite a Supreme Court ruling which established the use of hijab as a fundamental human right. One of the speakers at the conference explained that wearing the hijab is a religious obligation for Muslim women who have been directed to cover their bodies. She said it is therefore unacceptable for any discrimination against women on account of having hijab.
Sometimes the non-Muslims see hijab as a kind of barrier or as a kind of something that is anti-national development, feeling that Muslims are trying to show that they are Muslim is exclusive. But the truth of the matter, we all know that what we are trying to protect is the morality of the society. So the moment a lady wears hijab, it means she's being protected from the predatory eyes of the men.
The Coalition of Nigerian Muslim Women also staged an outreach in a park in Abuja where they engaged both Muslims and Christians, explaining the benefits of the hijab. Many women and girls were offered free pieces of headscarf, veils, and were taught how to tie them.
In a public park, you have different set of people, different faith, and different characters. So we feel that Islam is a religion for the universe, and then we need to share with everybody. And then this hijab being a very controversial issue in Nigeria, especially in our institution of higher learning and even in some few government establishments, we feel that we need to be here.
The group of Muslim women have insisted that everyone should understand that the hijab emphasizes the dignity, confidence, modesty, protection, and respect for females. They said the hijab is neither a symbol of the oppression of women nor an act of defiance against non-Muslims, and called on all Nigerians nursing this erroneous perception to stop in the interest of peaceful coexistence and respect for the law. Anjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
Scientists working with special electron microscopes in order to undertake cutting-edge research and product development. This is nanotechnology, the integration of science and engineering on a tiny scale, namely with atoms and molecules. A relatively new field of science and technology with perceived long-term benefits, one that Iran has taken very seriously and today is reaping its rewards. This is all in line with long-term goals and 3-10-year plans to develop nanotechnology in Iran with leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei's full support. But that is not enough. The main strategy of the Islamic Republic of Iran is to benefit from this cutting-edge technology. Therefore, according to officials at the Nanotechnology Development Headquarters, commercializing nano products is an important step and a top priority.
In 2001, which is pretty much the same time that other countries began to engage in nanotechnology development, we established a nanotech headquarters, and in many universities and research centers across the country, scientists started doing research in this field. We started with fewer than 10 scientists, but today there are more than 40,000 researchers and university professors working in this field in more than 150 nanotechnology research centers across the country.
Let me give you some statistics in order to explain what we mean by prioritizing. Right now, as we speak, we have commercialized 1,800 nanoproducts. More than 350 manufacturers have received nanotechnology production permits, and many laboratories are now equipped with or use nanotech devices and products. But the bad news is, in 2022, we sold over $1 billion worth of nanoproducts, and we earned $70 million from exports. Currently, 47 countries, including regional countries such as Iraq and Turkey, import nanoproducts made in Iran.
Advancements in a relatively new field of science, such as nanotechnology, is only one of the many achievements Iran has made after the Islamic Revolution, and definitely one that every single Iranian is proud of.
Over the past two decades, the Islamic Republic of Iran has been able to gain a firm foothold in nanotechnology, today ranking among the world's top five in the field. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
The UK's first national demo since the International Court of Justice ruling on the Israeli regime's genocidal war on Gaza was another enormous gathering. People came from all over the UK. The sentiment here, very clearly, ceasefire now.
And I, for one, will not sit at home and watch this genocide played out on television. They said never again in 1948, but it is happening again, and it's a Holocaust against the Gazans.
As with all the previous ones, this too was a broad spectrum of anti-war, pro-Palestinian sentiment, all here to push the government to act.
There is a sense here that international public opinion has had an impact. It's putting irresistible political pressure on the leaders here and around the world. And while the carnage continues, the calls for it to stop are growing louder.
In the run-up to the demo, an attempt by police to prevent it from finishing in Whitehall, the seat of government. Yet once again, people power prevailed. The UK government has been amongst the most hawkish pro-Israel states in the Western world. And the opposition Labour Party has not acted very differently with its purge of Israel critics from its ranks. Yet the Palestine Solidarity Movement in Britain has been the largest in Europe.
This is how we are showing those in power how we really feel. And how do we feel? We believe that a genocide is taking place in Palestine and that it is our government and our arms companies that are weaponizing that genocide and are profiteering from it.
A permanent ceasefire is yet to be achieved. But even if there were one tomorrow, organizers say, this movement isn't going away. The shift in public attitudes towards Palestine and its liberation is permanent. Said Pourreza, London.
Free Palestine, the slogan heard around the world echoed through the streets of the South Korean capital on Saturday as Israeli slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank goes on unabated. Palestinians in Seoul were also present at the event. Despite the bloodshed of innocent Palestinians, Israel still enjoys the protection of Western powers.
South Korea has abstained from UN votes calling for a ceasefire, although the government has also refrained from fully backing Israel. Seoul does engage in significant arms trade, however, with Tel Aviv. Activists here today, they want that arms trade to stop and for the South Korean government to take a firmer stand against Israel.
The Israeli regime may argue its behavior does not amount to genocide, but since October last year, more than 27,000 Palestinians, mostly civilians, have been killed and almost the entire population of Gaza is displaced. Still, Koreans believe their voices and that of others can make a difference. A global protest is planned for February 17th to show solidarity with Palestinians. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Amid the Western aggression against Yemen, thousands of people gathered in the capital Sana'a and other cities to urge the Yemeni army to expand its naval operations against American, British and Israeli-linked vessels in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. They also pledged to continue supporting Palestinians at all costs.
Our message to the forces of American Zionist aggression is that you need to stop killing women, children, and defenseless people in Gaza. God has blessed us with Islam, and we will not abandon our brothers in Palestine. The Westerners will see what we will do under the leadership of Mr. Abdul Malik al-Houthi, who does what he says.
Our hearts are broken over what's happening in Gaza, including crimes, starvation, and the siege imposed on the people of Gaza. They want those who survived the bombing to starve to death.
Protesters also slammed the European Union's bid to send military forces to the Red Sea, aiming to protect Israeli maritime navigation. The demonstrators said this move will escalate the conflict, since the Yemeni army will have the right to add European vessels to its list of targets.
The European Union is America's plaything. They are indeed many countries, but they follow America's orders to serve American interests. We call the Prosperity Alliance the Suicide Alliance because they commit suicide when they fight us. And we will not change our position no matter how much they threaten us and no matter how large a force they mobilize to fight us.
Any European force that comes to the Red Sea will have the same fate as the American and British forces, meaning that they will become legitimate targets for the Yemeni naval operations and will be hit daily by the Yemeni missile strikes.
Earlier, the leader of the Ansarullah movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, stated that U.S. attempts to seek help from China mediation to stop Yemen's naval operations show the failure of the U.S. and U.K. in their aggression. He also criticized Arab countries for exporting goods to Israel, calling it an act of betrayal as Palestinians starve to death in the besieged Gaza.
Despite the U.S. and U.K. airstrikes, people here insist that Yemeni naval operations should continue as long as the genocidal war on Gaza rages on. They urge their army to target the interests of any party that supports the Israeli regime.
Born of political exiles brought to the Cape of Good Hope by Dutch colonialists, the old Malay quarter of Cape Town, better known as Boerkop, is reaching back to its roots as a location of protest by raising a flag for Palestine. The houses of Boerkop have always been painted in eye-catching colours, but the walls of these homes have now taken on a whole new meaning. Tourists regularly frequent this area, and the paintings here convey a message that will travel around the world.
As Palestinians continue to endure the deadly Israeli onslaught on Gaza, a young South African nurse has taken the initiative by painting what some say is the largest mural of its kind for Palestine. He says by painting this large Palestinian flag in a location overlooking the Cape Town Central Business District, Palestine cannot be ignored.
With tourism comes photography, and
I decided to allow the world to protest inadvertently from every angle, from every ad, from every Instagram post. Anybody who comes to Bukab will be for Palestine.
Since launching the Murals for Gaza campaign, Khirdin says scores of residents have asked that their walls be painted to demonstrate support for Palestine. The project has also been taken up in other communities.
I'm just happy that I'm going to get it on my wall because we have all the people walking down here, and it tells a big story. It tells a tremendous story about the genocide that's what's happening.
If the mainstream media will not report on the atrocities being committed in Gaza, then the walls will speak. That is what we're working with. So we are just making that every wall is going to tell a story from every angle, from the birth of Zionism to the atrocities being committed to the strength and unity of this particular neighborhood on where we stand in the genocide.
Bukab, on the periphery of the Cape Town CBD, has had to contend with its own struggle of gentrification, as big business and foreigners have tried to evict the traditional residents from their ancestral homes. So they understand well the enduring struggle of Palestinians against the colonial settlers. Hassan Siriap, Cape Town.
Hours after targeting the American destroyer USS Gravely in the Red Sea, the spokesman for the Yemeni Armed Forces, Yahya Saria, announced the successful targeting of the U.S. commercial ship Koi, which was heading to the occupied ports of Palestine with several naval missiles.
The naval forces of the Yemeni army carried out a military operation targeting an American commercial ship that was heading to the ports of occupied Palestine with several suitable naval missiles that directly hit it. This operation comes only hours after the naval forces of the Yemeni army targeted the American destroyer USS Gravely with several naval missiles in the Red Sea. The hit was direct and accurate, thanks to God.
Experts say that conducting two operations within hours serves as evidence that the US-UK aggression against Yemen has failed to undermine the capabilities of the Yemeni army or halt their naval operations. And instead, the ongoing Western aggression will expand Yemeni operations even further.
These operations are a message that the Yemeni armed forces are in a state of high alert. After targeting the American destroyer Gravely, the U.S. thought that we could not carry out any other operation for 24 hours and tried to pass the merchant ship that was heading to the ports of occupied Palestine. But they were surprised that our forces targeted them. This is also a message that the American-British aggression has failed to limit the capabilities of the Yemeni army.
Following the Yemeni naval attacks, the US and UK carried out a fresh round of airstrikes against several positions in the capital Sana'a and other cities. US officials said the attack was carried out using F-18 fighter jets launched from an American military base in Bahrain.
Observers highlight that the Yemeni naval operations go beyond displaying military strength, rather seen as a humanitarian, ethical and religious duty to stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people. They assert that Western aggression will not dissuade Yemeni naval attacks, which are expected to cease only when Israel halts its genocidal war in Gaza. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Nicaragua has dedicated an avenue in its capital to the people of Gaza and Palestine. The mayor's office of Managua held a ceremony to officially name the street and a nearby park, which has been named Parque Palestina, in recognition and solidarity with the ongoing 75-year struggle against the Zionist occupation. In attendance were Nicaraguan solidarity groups and representatives of the Palestinian embassy, who together with the mayor of Managua unveiled the new street name.
We are very happy doing this act in honor of the fighting people and their historical struggle and the unconditional bond with the people of Nicaragua. We are inaugurating an avenue with the name of Gaza, an avenue that is in our historic center of the city, and we are demonstrating that Palestine is there in our hearts, in the hearts of Nicaraguans.
Eso muy significativo. It's very significant. This reflects the brotherhood and historical relationship between both peoples, both governments. In the midst of the Israeli bombing of our people in the Gaza Strip, Nicaragua has demonstrated many times its solidarity towards the Palestinian issue.
Earlier this month, the Government of Reconciliation and National Unity of Nicaragua filed a request before the International Court of Justice to join the case initiated by South Africa against Israel for the crime of genocide in Gaza, saying Nicaragua is determined to fulfill its obligation to contribute to preventing and punishing the genocidal acts that are being carried out in the Gaza Strip.
The children deserve to sleep in peace, women to live in peace. Palestinian families deserve to live in peace. That is why today we name this park with the great affection, with great solidarity with the people of Palestine.
This is not just any street. Pista Gaza is located in one of the most transited arteries in the historic center of Managua. Homage paid by the Nicaraguan people and their government with the just cause of the Palestinian people. Camila Escalante, Managua.
Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him, has said, "Whoever remembers us to Ahlul Bayt and his or her eyes fills with tears, his or her face will never burn in the fire of hell."
In the limelight.
At least 10 other countries quickly followed the United States, including the UK and Germany, in pausing aid to Palestinians. This group of historic and present-day offenders has now been dubbed the Axis of Genocide. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. D. The Electronic Intifada wrote, the Zionist regime has killed more than 150 UNRWA employees since October 7th. That onslaught did not lead the U.S. or Israel's European allies to stop providing the Zionist regime with support and military assistance. But the child killer regime of Israel's dubiously timed allegations that 12 UNRWA employees were involved in armed activity quickly led at least 11 countries to suspend their UNRWA contributions. Notably, there has been no hue and cry over Israeli teachers and tech workers taking part in a genocidal Israeli military assault on Gaza. UNRWA did not comment on a question from the Electronic Intifada as to whether Lot Sereni had called for criminal prosecution of those Israeli troops and politicians involved in the killing of UNRWA personnel. Nor did the agency comment on a question as to how many of the more than 10,000 Palestinian children killed by the Zionist regime's assault had attended UNRWA schools. Lot Sereni has used the word abhorrent to describe the Palestinian military assault that began on October 7th. The agency did not comment on a question as to what terminology Lot Sereni applies to the Zionist regime's genocidal policies against Palestinians in Gaza. Juliet Tuma, director of communications for UNRWA, emailed the Electronic Intifada that there is a UN investigation taking place, and as long as that's happening, I'm not able to provide any more information on the allegations or the UN investigation. No comment on which court Lot Sereni had in mind for possible criminal prosecution of UNRWA employees, including possibly the two-tier Israeli legal system, was forthcoming. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, like Lot Sereni, has called for possible criminal prosecution of UN employees. Stefan Dojarik, spokesperson of the Secretary General, said that we have no further comment on that topic, referring to the location of the court and whether criminal prosecution could take place in an Israeli court. UNRWA is certainly in a delicate position, desperate as it is to keep donor support to avoid running out of money in February. That cutoff would come in the middle of the worst crisis to hit Gaza since 1948 Nakba, when some 800,000 Palestinians fled Zionist militias for Gaza, the West Bank, and elsewhere in the region. But cowering before supporters of Israel's genocide has quickly shown itself to be a losing strategy. One of the International Court of Justice orders was for humanitarian aid to be increased in Gaza, yet the US, Germany, and the UK have responded by actually cutting off humanitarian aid. Whether the ICJ will respond to this remains to be seen. With the Biden administration imperiling humanitarian aid via UNRWA, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi targeted ceasefire demonstrators during a Sunday interview with CNN's Dana Bash, perhaps the network's leading anti-Palestinian anchor. Upset about anti-genocide protesters outside her home, Pelosi sought to blame Russian President Vladimir Putin. Pelosi claimed, "But for them to call for a ceasefire is Mr. Putin's message. Make no mistake, this is directly connected to what he would like to see, something with Ukraine. It's about Putin's message. I think some of those protesters are spontaneous and organic and sincere. Some, I think, are connected to Russia. And I say that having looked at this for a long time now, as you know." This came as news to many. Pelosi's rant is pushing more Democrats toward the exits, a process already underway with black pastors urging President Joe Biden to board a ceasefire. In October, however, Pelosi claimed protesters should go back to China, apparently basing her comments on an August 2023 hit piece by the New York Times against Code Pink, the organization, a grassroots organization working to end U.S. warfare and imperialism, pushed back against the newspaper's attack by posting solidarity statements on its website. Media Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, told the Electronic Intifada, Pelosi's accusations that protesters against Israel's genocide are Russian assets who should be pursued by the FBI is grotesque and a slap in the face of the millions of Americans who, at great personal cost, have been trying to stop Israel's slaughter. She added, if anyone has taken funds to support a foreign government, it is not pro-Palestinian protesters, but officials like Nancy Pelosi, who are in the pocket of Israel lobbyists. Officials such as Pelosi, she asserted, should be investigated, not those of us who want to stop the killing of innocent Palestinians. Democrats from Biden to Pelosi are ignoring the first rule of being in a hole. Stop digging. The octogenarians in the party, however, seem incapable of reversing policies alienating key constituencies. Yet, newer, younger House leaders, such as Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries, seem determined to cling to the same policies as their Democratic predecessors, infuriating the political base. It's a recipe for core constituencies to stay home in November. Many Democratic politicians have effectively thrown in their lot with the Zionist regime's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and, by extension, his ultra-right-wing coalition partners, who want to expel Palestinians from Gaza and rebuild illegal settlements there. The complicity in genocide, Francis Boyle pointed to, runs deeper and deeper with each passing day. The costs are rising for Biden, both in the region and at home. He was repeatedly warned about the Zionist regime's genocidal actions, yet chose to double down in support of the Zionist regime's war crimes and its right-wing government. For her efforts, his leading Democratic congressional critic, Rashida Tlaib, was censured by her colleagues, including some in her own party. Biden co-owns this genocide with Netanyahu and has full responsibility for the American casualties resulting from his pursuit of empire and refusal to say no to the Zionist regime's prime minister.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, lovely friends from all around the world. Welcome back to a new episode of
Youth Station.
Well, this is Asma and
I am Beta here.
I don't have to say how happy I am to be here again.
Exactly, it's the same old story.
Yes.
And our beautiful cozy corner.
Of course. Youth Station is always such a very sweet corner to sit and talk about.
It is.
Important issues related to all the youngsters from all around the world.
Yeah.
Yes, and the same would go to today's episode. So as for today, we're going to talk about something which I guess is very important in our lives.
And what is?
It is the chances that we have had in our lives. And is it good to think about it, the chances we have had or no?
The first word that came to my mind by the elaboration that you told me is regret. You know, most of the time we are getting drowned in all the regrets that we have for the past time. Mm-hmm. And even as youth generation, we don't have this hint in our mind that we have a lot of time. Mostly we feel like we lost a lot of opportunities in the past.
Yeah.
And I believe this is something natural.
But the point is,
we are overthinking it.
Yeah.
It isn't like a good way of thinking and trying to be better in order not to be regretful in the future. It's just, you know, living in the past.
Past is never finished.
Yeah.
I do believe that past is a part of us, and without that, we cannot have a future. So I think time is fluid. Like, there is past, present, and future all together.
Yeah.
So there is no ending point to each one of them, and there is no starting point, I suppose, but we can just manage how to think about them. And by the way, the word chance has this connotation to regret.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty much natural to regret all the chances we have had, and we didn't make the best out of them.
I believe you're actually true about this point, about the fact that you mentioned time is fluid.
Yeah.
This is something really interesting because we are looking at time as something which is a kind of a strict line, and past is behind you and future is above you, and you're in the middle of these two.
Just like how the grammatical books teach us about time. Time is not like that. I don't think
exactly.
So.
I believe so. But the point is changing this background thought that you have in your mind that time is something like that. You cannot go in the past and you cannot see the future.
Mm-hmm.
You are at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, we cannot change this truth and this fact. And you have to understand that the present that you are living in is the past and the future.
Exactly.
And is the future you were wishing for.
Exactly. And there comes the idea of carpe diem and seize the day. So you have already the moment and you have to make the best out of it.
Yeah.
And this moment is going to be your past, and then it would create your future. So as you see, it's all about what you do at the present moment. And
exactly.
As the name suggests, it's a present. You have to make the best out of it. And I'm not the kind of people who say forget about the chances you have had in the past and do not overthink it, because I just think it's impossible.
What do you mean?
I mean, let's go for a short break and then we'll be back to see what's going on.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Well, it's Youth Station, by the way. We were talking about the chances and the time that has gone, but we still think about it, the chances that we have lost. But I was just saying that I'm not the kind of person who'd suggest that, okay, you can forget about the past as in something that is finished and it's gone forever. You don't have to think about it. Because I do believe that it would remain with you, or at least the effect it creates would remain with you.
For sure.
Yeah.
There are some imprints of everything you do in the past, like scars of the bad things that happens to you. And the thing is, you cannot change some of them. I mean, you are not that powerful in order to choose everything in your life. You have free will. You have this power to choose in your life. But sometimes there are things you cannot change.
Exactly.
Like diseases that you are going to go through.
Exactly.
Like some incurable diseases. The first thing that people ask when they are diagnosed with kind of incurable disease is that, why me? You know, this question shows that these kind of people always think about the past time, about the chances that they lost in the past.
Exactly.
And these kind of stories, I believe that you cannot control your thought that much and completely forget about all the things that happened in the past. But when you change your perspective about life and think like life is a test for you, is a domain that will actually show you your potential capacity, then this kind of bad things that happens to you, and this even at the times that you lost a chance, is a blessing for you.
Yeah, I do agree. But at the very same time, we have it also in our, Islamic heritage and all the narrations that have been passed down to us, like Imam Ali alayhi salam, when he's talking about time and the chances that we had, he keeps saying that try to make the best of your chances before the time is over and then you regret it.
Yeah.
So the fact that I say we cannot stop thinking about it, is inevitable. We cannot stop thinking about it. But at the same time, we should think about it and consider it and notice it at the very first square.
Exactly.
You know, you have a lot of opportunities. You have plenty of them. But the thing is that at the very moment when they start, when they are in front of you, you don't take care of them. You don't consider them. But then years later, days later, months later, you come to notice that, okay, oh, that was the chance of my life, but I didn't take it.
Yeah. As you mentioned, there are so many narrations about youth generation in our Islam. And the point is, this generation is the treasure of every country, every nation, everywhere you go. And the point is, because of the mentality of the modern era, we feel like we have to be consequence-based. We have to look at the result of everything we do. But it's not like that. Sometimes the process is more important than the result.
Exactly, because it leads to growth.
Exactly. And as a youth, you cannot have all the so-called successes like money, like, I don't know,
status. Like everything at the same time.
Yeah,
it's impossible.
It's impossible because you're still young. You have to spend a lot of time in order to achieve whatever you want. So you have to look at your process.
Exactly.
Your
achievement. And by the way, prosperity comes step by step. It's not like you're going to run and suddenly everything is in your hand.
Exactly.
You can't have everything at the palm of your hand at the very, in no time, actually.
Yeah. And when you understand this mere fact that it's impossible to have everything, then it'll become easier for you to understand
to
that you cannot regret
chance,
the past because you cannot change it. But there is future for you in order to get changed.
Also, again, to mention a verse, a narration by Imam Ali alayhi salam, I would say that he says that do not think about the past because it's gone. Do not think about the future because it's still not coming. It's a mystery. Just try to take care of your present moment and live in this moment. Try to make the best out of it because this is the present that you have.
And another thing is the group of youth that, they don't care about the past. They don't care about the future. They want to seize the moment. They want to live in the present time. And there is something I want to mention about this group of youth, but let's go for a short break.
Of course. Welcome back. Well, this is the last part of today's episode. We're having quite funny discussion about chance.
Yeah. I don't call it funny. It's something
that was ironic,
really serious,
by the way.
Yeah, I believe. And the point is, I was talking about the group of youth generation that they don't care about the past opportunities. They don't care about anything.
Yeah.
And there is a beautiful narration from Imam Ali, peace be upon him and his family, about these groups of people, that you shouldn't blame these people directly because it may lead to their rebelliousness.
Oh.
And this is something really interesting. You cannot force the youth generation in order to think or not to think about the past or opportunities.
Yeah.
You have to let them try. You have to let them in their domain, for sure.
So as parents, then you know there comes a problem. I don't know how to just shake sense into my youngster's head. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. First of all, you have to lessen this gap between you and your youngsters. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not, by the way, a supporter of that people who say you have to be friends with your children. No.
Of course.
You
authority
are the parents.
Has got to say something as well.
But you have to be really mindful.
Moderate.
And attentive about the mindset of this new generation.
Exactly.
And I believe then...
aside from what you said, I do believe that life is a great teacher. No matter how headless you are, just as time goes by, just as you grow older, time and nature will teach you everything. Sometimes you have to pay too much for it, because just at the moment when you're going to open your eyes, you look at the mirror and you see you have got some of those gray hairs in your head.
Yeah.
So before that time comes, you have to be very much considerate of every single moment you're going through.
I believe you have a limited time.
Exactly.
And when you have limited time, you have to have priorities in your life.
That's the point.
And a priority will solve most of your problems, most of these feeling of regret that you've, for example, lost your opportunities in the past and the things like that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to prioritize your time, your achievements, your goals, your friends, and
that's why all of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam have taught us to be considerate about our timing, to devote a special time for every single thing we do on a daily basis. Like, we have to have a plan for our life.
Exactly.
Not to waste our time thoroughly without having any idea about what I'm going to accomplish in this one day of my life. So we have to prioritize, we have to make plan for our life, we have to consider and see all the chances that come into the way and the path of our lives and make the best out of it. And I do believe that these things come by practice. You know, it's not like you are born with that set of mind that, okay, you have to have a plan, you have to prioritize your time. No, it's something you gain it through practice.
Exactly. And the last thing I want to mention in our beautiful episode is that sometimes you may fail. I mean, there is no certainty for you out there.
There's
that
no guarantee
if you try,
for anything.
Yeah, if you try, you will succeed. No, mm-hmm. it's not like that.
Exactly.
Sometimes you try your best, but you cannot achieve whatever you want.
Sometimes you have to fall down many times.
Exactly. And the point here is for you to have this resistance towards failure.
Yeah.
When you are resistant to that, then at the end of the day, you are satisfied with yourself.
Aside from that self-growth, you
know? Exactly.
Sometimes you lose many chances in your life. You regret it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it helps you to grow in your mentality, in your perspective, in the way you determine or define life for other people.
Yeah.
So that's another way of growing.
And the point was self-satisfaction.
Exactly.
Sometimes you have to be satisfied with the road that you passed up to now.
So take care of each and every single moment that gets into your life and acts as a chance.
And may Allah help us in this difficult road.
To see all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, to see all of them and to make the best out of them.
Exactly.
Because sometimes chances come to us.
We cannot see.
There are too much of curtains in front of our eyes, and then we cannot see any of them. So, Bita, this was so enjoyable to be with you. And dear listeners, thank you for staying with us. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Until another session from me and from Bita, we just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. This is